How toxic is your workplace? A review of nearly 230 studies suggests that where you work and how you're managed can be very harmful to health, with sufficient years of life lost that workplace stress can equate to some of the more traditional risk factors for premature death. One of the people who conducted this study is Jeffrey Pfeiffer, who's Professor of Organizational Behavior at the Graduate School of Business at Stanford University in California.
There had been, of course, over the years, tremendous amounts of epidemiological research on individual workplace stressors and their effects on health outcomes for various kinds, and then also to see what the aggregate effects were, at least in the U.S., in terms of death and cost, and the deaths, 120,000 excess deaths per year, which would make this the fifth leading cause of death in the United States. And the workplace stressors include things like absence of access to health insurance, which is both a stressor and it causes you to not have care. Work-family conflict, long work hours, the absence of job control, low organizational justice, things such as this, which I would call psychosocial stressors at work that cause you to not have time, to have an absence of control over your work, to work too long hours.
So let's just pick those apart before we get so people understand what the results more. So what's work-family conflict?
It's the stress that comes from when you have, for instance, the U.S., as you probably know, does not have mandated paid time off or parental leave or family leave or even sick days. And so if you have a sick child, for instance, or a sick elder parent, you may be at work and you're stressed because you're trying to deal with your sick child or your sick elder, and you're also trying to do your work at the same time. So it's kind of an overload.
And low job control is the inability to make day-to-day decisions about how you do your job. Somebody's telling you what to do.
Yes, and they're telling you what to do and they're telling you when to do it. And another source of stress, which is particularly prevalent, I think, in the U.S., though it seems to be spreading around the world, is the stress that comes from economic insecurity. Layoffs, the so-called gig economy, where you don't know how much money you're going to be making from one week to the next. So you're trying to piece together a living while you don't know whether you're going to have a job. That's another huge source of stress.
And low social support at work?
There's been a bunch of research over the years that have said that if you have friends at work, you have a strong workplace culture, that mitigates the effect of stress. So low social support would be the absence of those things. You have to kind of cope with everything that comes at you pretty much on your own.
And low organizational justice?
Is there a kind of fairness in how decisions are made? Is there a lot of favoritism and not being very transparent about how the decisions are being made? So people are hired and fired without understanding why. People are given raises or not without understanding why.
And so low pay is not necessarily a definite feature. You can have high-paying jobs which fulfill all these criteria.
That's exactly correct. But there's also enormous now health disparities in the U.S. And so one of the things we try to do is to figure out to what extent this rising inequality, I mean, basically for the last 30 or 40 years, 100% of the increase in lifespan has been enjoyed by the top 20 or 30% of the U.S. population. People with low levels of education are going to be in places where they have less job security, much more risk of being unemployed. They're going to have less job control. And so we wanted to understand how much of this rising inequality in health was due to the inequality in the exposures less educated people faced. And our estimates is somewhere between 10 and 40% of the inequality in health is because of the difference in the workplace conditions that less educated people face.
That's huge. So just to remind the listeners, we're talking about 228 studies that you pulled the data from, and you looked at four different health outcomes. What did you find?
Once we pulled the studies and we did the meta-analyses, the next thing we wanted to do, and this was the contribution of my colleague Stefano Zinios, is he said we need to compare this to something that isn't like, you know, shooting somebody with a bullet, but is kind of a health risk that's recognized as a health risk and has been regulated as a health risk. The workplace exposures that we're talking about are as harmful to health as secondhand smoke.
If you're talking about a 50% increase in poor health, physician-diagnosed illness, and age-related death rates by 20% up, which you translate to 120,000 deaths per year.
And I don't know what's going on so much in Australia, but certainly in the United States, there's this like obsession with healthcare costs and why are healthcare costs so high. And one of the other reasons why we did the studies that we did was because it struck us that people were looking kind of in the wrong place. They were saying, well, you know, everybody needs to stop smoking and stop drinking and to stop taking drugs and to exercise more and to eat a healthier diet. But again, there's an enormous literature that suggests all of these health-related behaviors behaviors are affected by workplace stress. So if you're stressed, you're going to eat more. If you're stressed, you're going to drink more. If you face economic insecurity, there's studies that show that you're more likely to smoke or smoke more. And so we believe that if you're really serious about fixing population health, you need to look at the workplace as one important place, not the only place, but one important place to begin, because people spend a lot of their time at work, and work is consequential for their social identity, and work's where a lot of stress happens.
So what can workplaces do about this?
If they wanted to do something about it, they could do basically everything that we've talked about. I mean, layoffs are not only harmful to human health, but the economic insecurity that comes from layoffs turns out not to be very helpful to firm profitability either. So you could provide more economic stability and more assurance, which is something that Germany has certainly tried to do. They've tried to spread layoffs out and to share problems and to give companies some incentive to keep people on the payroll rather than throwing them off the payroll and then having the health consequences, and also then throwing the burden really onto the state. So that's one thing you could certainly do. You could worry about work hours. If you've worked a full day, by 6 o'clock in the evening, you should be exhausted anyway, so go home. The idea that you're going to be productive working like a gazillion hours is, of course, fallacious. That's one of the reasons why we regulate the work hours of people like truck drivers and airline pilots, because we know that the longer they work, the more prone they are to making errors. You could certainly give people more control over their jobs and say to them, look, I want you to accomplish a bunch of stuff, but how you do it and when you do it is flexible. And you see this now, particularly in the Silicon Valley. You see, for high wage, very scarce workers like fancy software engineers, people will say, we'll give them a lot of control. They say, we want you to be productive, but how and when you do it is kind of up to you. But the lower educated don't have that job control at all, but you could give them more discretion. And you could put in policies that make work-family conciliation a bigger part of what organizations do. There is, you know, Working Mother magazine, which has a list of the most family-friendly workplaces, and those are a set of policies that other workplaces could also follow.
One view of the future is that it's all doom and disaster because, as you say, we've got the gig economy. People have this portfolio of careers during their life. There's no expectation of loyalty in either direction. Or you could say, well, you know, the rise of companies like Uber give you a lot of control over your future, and the gig economy is actually a means of asserting control over your life. What's your view of the future, the way things are shaping now?
I think it's pretty dim, because Uber gives you ostensible control over your life. The average Uber driver is not making a lot of money, and of course the economic incentives of Uber and the economic incentives of its drivers are almost completely negatively related, in the sense that as a driver, I want not to have a billion Uber drivers, because I would like to have the ability to have a lot of trips. From Uber's point of view, they succeed when I call Uber on my cell phone and
you're there in a nanosecond,
like in 20 seconds.
Yeah.
And since Uber doesn't pay its drivers except when they're actually driving some percentage of the trip fee, Uber has an incentive to have as many drivers as possible, and the drivers would like to have few drivers. So many of the Uber drivers are not making very much money, and it's certainly probably going to get worse in the future. And so they're facing an enormous amount of economic instability, let alone the fact, since in the U.S., everything comes with your job, Uber doesn't provide benefits, which is another big issue. And Obamacare, by the way, hasn't solved that problem yet either. And so you don't get health insurance, you're not going to be part of a pension scheme, you're not going to get unemployment benefits, because what does it mean to be unemployed if you're not employed in the first place? And so I don't see a very pleasant future for many of these folks.
So the bottom line here is that governments and insurers and people who pay for healthcare need to listen up, because the workplace could undo a lot of good work in more traditional areas of prevention, such as better diet, more exercise, and stopping smoking, if the workplace is the equivalent of smoking somebody else's cigarette.
That is exactly the conclusion, that if we're serious about promoting health, and certainly if we're interested in promoting psychological well-being as well, there needs to be much more focus on the workplace. And if you look at the data, this has mostly all moved in the wrong direction. Employee engagement is lower. job satisfaction is lower, trust in leadership is lower than it was in the past. And so ironically, the workplace is getting worse, even as we now have better understanding of the importance of the workplace as a locus for determining people's health and their mortality. There are companies that are quite economically successful that do have policies in place that make their workplaces healthier. People need to understand that when people come to work for you, or companies need to understand, people come to work for you, they have entrusted their lives and their well-being to the companies, and the companies ought to, I think, be better stewards, I guess is the word I would use.
Thank you very much for joining us on the Health Report.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Jeffrey Pfeffer is Professor of Organizational Behavior at the Graduate School of Business at Stanford University in California. And you're listening to The Health Report here on RN with me, Norman Swan.